Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Fucking Right Chicago podcast. We are glad you found your way back to us this week, considering that the second round was pretty... The end of the second round was pretty intense. We've got lots to talk about today, but let's start off with Megan. How you doing? How you doing this fine Saturday afternoon?
I'm doing good. You know, it's been a really relaxing day. I ran errands in the morning and then have done nothing since. Oh, we love that. We love that.
We love being productive.
Tomorrow is going to be my, you know, do everything day. Like, I'm going to pack because I'm moving in 2 weeks and low-key forgot about that. So I got to pack and then I'm going to clean and be productive tomorrow. And today is just going to be like the chill day.
That was me yesterday. That was me yesterday. Yeah. Well, I got some kind of stomach bug over the weekend, but I got it on Thursday night. So I was up in the wee hours of the morning doing all that fun stuff that comes with having a stomach bug. Won't go into detail. Yesterday I had a fever for most of the day. So yesterday was my day to do absolutely nothing. I woke up at like noon. Okay, I took a shower, and by the time I was out of the shower, it was like 1 o'clock. And that was when Team USA was on. And so I sat down in my basement on my little recliner chair that, if you were here when I had my shoulder surgery, I slept on that recliner for over a month. Sitting on the little recliner, eating my toast, eating my rice. And I don't think I got up from the chair until like 6:30. So I got up and I was like, I should probably see if my legs still function. Went outside for a whole 2 seconds. And yeah, like yesterday I watched a ton of YouTube videos. Like I watched the Cubs, I watched Team USA. I didn't do anything, and I haven't had a day like that in a long time.
Dude, those days are so nice. I say that like I don't get them like every weekend. I practically do this every Saturday where I just plant myself on, I do some stuff, like some productive stuff in the morning. Like I go run errands and get like groceries, and then I'm like, wow, I've done everything for the day. So then I just like chill on the couch, plant myself on the couch, catch up on YouTube videos, and just veg out.
Yeah, and it's nice. Like, well, and it's at the worst time because this is like this upcoming week is my last week of classes, and then I have finals the week after. But I have a sales presentation on Wednesday. I have a group project due this week, and I have a test on Friday. So now wasn't the best time to sit back and relax. I still have to finish my sales presentation. So that's what I'm going to be doing after we finish recording this podcast before the Sharks play tonight, or while the Sharks are playing tonight. But yeah, it was nice to just not do anything. But tomorrow's Mother's Day, so we're going up to, I'm going up to my grandma's house, my nana's house, and then I'm going to the Cubs game. So hopefully they can win. It's supposed to be 51 though, and like cold.
It's a little chilly.
And so I'm not looking forward to that. We're going to be in the bleachers.
So I would very much prefer the weather there than what we have here. It has been so muggy this week. It's been in like the mid 80s and muggy. And let me tell you, it's the worst. I would take 50 degree weather any day.
Yes.
It's just been like, I ran errands this morning and I was like, I'm wearing currently like a tiny crop top, tank top thing and shorts. And I was sweating. Like all I had to do was walk like, you know, 30 feet to Target, and I was dripping.
Just, and I'm out
like,
of
this
breath
is the worst. Like, it's just gross. And it hasn't rained yet.
Right. But
they've told me, they being the weather people, that is supposed to rain all weekend, and I have not seen any rain yet. And as somebody who really likes rain, I'm disappointed.
I was gonna say it's been raining here today, but it's like showers. It's not like it's like a constant drizzle, you know? Like yeah. It's just
see,
a
that's what we're supposed
drizzle.
To get all weekend here, and like it's raining at the beach, it's raining in the mountains, it's raining, you know, 2 hours south in Charlotte, and it's not raining here, and I just have questions.
I just have questions.
I have so many questions. And I just want like a nice, knowing my luck, it'll rain like when I have to go take my dog out. I just know that that's going to happen. It's going to wait until I have to, you know, actually go outside.
That's how it always happens, right?
It is. That's 1000% how it always happens. And I keep getting alerts from my little Weather Channel app like, oh, it's going to rain in the next like 10 minutes. I'm like, are you really?
No,
are you sure? Hasn't rained yet.
You're a liar.
Yeah, it's still, I mean, it's dark and it's like kind of windy, but it's not really doing anything else.
Yeah.
There's your weather update for Raleigh on this fine Sunday afternoon.
Well, now that we've got through that, let's talk about, there's a little Blackhawks news, other than Patrick Kane and Alex DeBrincat, tearing it up at Worlds day one, even though they lost. The Blackhawks, again, this season have been doing the Blackhawks Fan Choice Awards, where fans can go on and vote for different categories in which Blackhawk they think they should win. So there are a couple fan choice awards that have already come out. The first one that came out was Patrick Kane. He was the Photo of the Year winner. I think it was his goal against Detroit on February 10th. I was there. It was epic. It's a picture of him like from the side, and he's on the one knee, and he's doing the celly. He's doing the throw in his arm thing. I'm not very good at describing. So that was Photo of the Year, and then Dylan Strome wins Best Newcomer of the Year. He obviously was traded over to the Blackhawks on November 25th. Tore it up ever since then. In 58 games that he played here after his trade, he had 17 goals and 34 assists for 51 points. He had just 6 points, which was 3 goals and 3 assists in 20 games for the Coyotes at the beginning of the season. And actually for Second City Hockey, we're rolling out like a bunch of off-season stuff right now. And I took a look into Strome's stats, and I think there's only, I did like a little comparison thing, like from his time in 3 years in, 3 years in Arizona versus 1 year in Chicago. And I think there's only one, two, three, there's only five categories out of a lot that, were negatives. Like he had 10 more goals than he did, 10 more games played, 10 more goals, 25 more assists, 35 more points. He was plus 13. He was the same in penalty minutes. He had 29 more shots. His shooting percentage went up 7%. His average time on ice went up almost 5 minutes. And like his I did advanced stats too, but two of them that I really like to look at is on ice goals for and on ice goals against. And he had 35, he had 46. He was on the ice for 46 of Chicago's goals for. Or 61 of them. So that was a plus 46 from when he was in Arizona. And then he was on the ice for 56 goals against, but he was only on for 21 in Arizona. But his Corsi went down only like 2%. His Fenwick went down only like 2%. But his point shares and everything like that, and goals per game, points per game, everything went up, which is incredible. But like just even looking at like basic stuff, that's like he had 25 more assists than he did in one season than three in
Arizona.
It's
so funny too, because when that trade happened, I literally did not know what to expect, because I'm not trying to say that I'm like not like other girls, but I just didn't follow Dylan Strome. Like I literally didn't know anything about him. It's not that I didn't care. I just didn't follow him, because I just didn't. Like, I didn't follow Connor McDavid either. So it was just one of those things where I just didn't know anything about him.
Yeah.
And I was like, I want Nick Schmaltz, though. And now I'm very happy.
Oh, yeah. Well, and that's what I was going to say. That's what you have me for. Because I followed Dylan Strome and all of them, like, through their junior years and all that stuff. So I was Very excited because I knew that he was a really, really good player. I just don't think he had the right, like, he wasn't in the right place in Arizona. Like, they didn't develop him in the best way possible for him. So I was really glad to see him come over here because I was like, okay, I know he's good. I've seen him play hockey before. Like, he played on the line with Alex DeBrincat and Connor McDavid. Like, I think you have to be pretty good to play with Connor McDavid on a consistent basis. And
What's funny is that there are so many guys who are on that team that I didn't know were on that team. Like, I didn't know Alex DeBrincat was on that team with them until this year.
Yeah.
And
Travis Dermott was on that team. The Radishes were on that team.
Warren Fogle was on that team. Mm-hmm. Did not know that. Just so many guys. Like, you look at that roster and you're like, wow.
Yeah,
that is an NHL roster.
Yes, no, that's that, and that's my favorite part. That's my favorite part because so many guys like, and that's why I like watching the O because so many guys like. Obviously, if you follow like junior hockey and youth hockey, like the O is probably where the O is where majority of your players are going to be coming from. Like the WHL produces a lot of great players. The Q produces a lot of great players, like Nico Hischier and Maxime Comtois played in the Q. But the O is like where a lot of those heavy teams are based. Like, you got Erie Otters, you have the London Knights, you have Kitchener Rangers, you got Barrie Colts, like, all of those teams that are in that Toronto kind of upper area. That's where you get most of your young prospects from, so it's really fun to watch. And, like, now a lot of them, like, I'm pretty sure, what's-his-face, there's one guy, Anthony Cirelli was on that team, who plays in Tampa now. There's just a lot of really cool young guys that are breaking into the league that come from the O, so... it's pretty fun to watch. And then the other award that was announced out of the three is Patrick Kane was named the most valuable Blackhawk. He is a Ted Lindsay Award finalist, and this was his best season of his career. He collected 110 points, which is 44 goals and 66 assists in 81 games. And he led the Blackhawks in goals, assists, and points, as well as shots. He had 341 shots this season. So... his assists and his 66 assists and 110 points were both career highs. His goals was he was two away. He had 46 in that 15-16 season when he won those three. He won the Hart, the Ted Lindsay, and he won the Art Ross that year. And then, of course, he had that 20-game point streak from January 3rd to February 24th. And then it also says, this is from the NHL, like the Blackhawks, Chris Westcott. This is his article about it from Blackhawks.com. But he recorded at least one point in every road game from November 23rd to March 2nd, which is crazy. And then he passed Steve Larmer on the franchise's all-time points list with 938. And then it says at the very bottom here, he turned 30 in November, but he is the captain of Team USA at the Men's World Championship, so which we will talk about later in the podcast as well. But yeah, I thought it was pretty well-deserving. I mean, I thought maybe Jonathan Taves. Sure. Should I voted for Jonathan Taves? Because obviously, why not?
I voted for Keener.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I just thought Taser because he hit career highs in every... Like, that too. Like, he had career highs in every category. But also, like, I think it made it sweeter because he, like you said, he rebounded so well from
his season last year. Because last year and the year before were just so bad. And
yes.
Like, I would never sit here and say that he's a bad player because he's not. He's a Hall of Famer for sure. Mm-hmm. I don't have a single question about that. And it was just, like, last year and the year before, I'm like, dang, like, is he already hitting, like, has he already hit his peak? But it's pretty clear that he has not.
No.
He just didn't look like himself the past 2 years. So definitely glad to see him looking a little bit more like the Jonathan Taves we all know and love.
Exactly. Exactly.
And then, the Duncan Keith goal too, won for best goal of the year.
Oh yes, yes. It wasn't on here, or maybe I just skipped by it. No, it's not on there. It's not on here. Maybe I think I just skipped by it. But yes, Duncan Keith's goal. It was versus the Avalanche. It was towards the end of the season. Yep. I can't remember exactly what day, but it was the overtime goal where he went end to end.
It was like the last. It was one of the late ones in March because they were wearing their old school, like they were wearing the Winter Classic jerseys.
Yes, it was in February sometime, because I remember February? I think it was March. February or early March, like I can't remember exactly when, but I remember I was
I'm gonna go look it up.
I had a sleepover with two of my friends from my sorority, and we got back to her house, my friend's house, and I got the notification that was going to overtime, and I was like, okay, guys, I just want to watch overtime. Like, I didn't watch the game at all that night. I was like, I just want to watch the overtime. Right. And we turned it on, and they had never watched a hockey game. Well, Claire, my friend Claire, they've watched a hockey game with me. But my other friend Alyssa had never watched a hockey game with me, so I'm sitting there and I'm like, but this poor girl, I'm like screaming at my television as this is going on, and she's never experienced this before, and I freaked out, and they obviously knew that it was a good thing that we had won, but they didn't understand, like, the concept of Duncan Keith taking a puck end-to-end and going to the net like that, like a defenseman doing that. Like, they didn't understand. That's why I was freaking out.
I've never seen anything like that, and it was on March 24th.
Okay, March, yeah, so end of March. So,
and
yeah.
I was, like, I watched it, and that was one of the games, that was one of the rare games where I stayed up late to watch a game, late on, a weeknight. I think it was, like, a Sunday. And I'm so glad I did, because part of me was like, well, I should just go to bed, because who cares? But I care. So I stayed up and watched it, and literally, goals that go end to end like that just blow my mind, because it's not like, and I know I'm not an athlete, I get it, but that just seems so difficult. And like, to be able to hang on to the puck that whole time. I mean, I have an issue going up like 3 flights of stairs, or like walking across a concourse at a stadium or an arena. So for him to do that was very impressive to me. And then again, like, I'm not an athlete, so, like, of course, like, I'm not conditioned or whatever, and Duncan Keith's not human, but, I mean, I, like, for him to be able to hang on to the puck the whole time and not lose possession of it once, and then to score, the goal was so weird, too, because I didn't think it went in initially.
Yeah.
But,
His celly tells you that it went in, like.
Yeah, sure does. I was so excited. I jumped off the couch, like, I literally jumped off the couch. I scared the crap out of my dog.
Boom!
But it was like, oh my gosh, it was one of the coolest goals. That's the one I voted for, because you just can't, you can't top that. That's like,
right, right.
That's the best.
Yes, no, that was a good goal. That was insane. And like, his celly was probably just the best part. But so that's, we'll get into, there's more Blackhawks stuff to talk about, but we're going to talk about that when we get down to Worlds. So let's, there's only a couple things going around the NHL right now that we could talk about.
Not much, pal.
So Ken Holland, this happened on last Tuesday. Ken Holland was officially named the general manager of the Edmonton Oilers. Ken Hitchcock has been told that he will not return as head coach. So it looks like, from what I was listening to on 31 Thoughts yesterday, Dave Tippett is in the front running for that job. But there's also been rumors that Dave Tippett and Jacques Martin are being looked at by Buffalo. So we'll see how that goes. But also, I don't know if anybody watched the press conference. I watched the press conference as he was getting...
I watched pieces of it.
As he was getting welcomed into the Oilers organization. And Daryl Katz was there, which Daryl Katz doesn't talk ever. Like... Literally, he'll make maybe one or two media appearances every season, and that's all you're getting from Daryl Katz. But John Shannon tweeted, actually, because it kind of looked like Daryl Katz was, I don't know, kind of looked like he got off of a beach somewhere and wasn't really like...
I was
like,
going to say, he looked, his hair was all like frazzled, and he looked like weirdly tan, but it also kind of looked like he had like, I hate saying this because I know the situation, but, like, it looked like he had, like, botched, like, plastic surgery on his face.
Yeah.
And I was not sure what was happening. And I don't know anything about the Oilers, but I just happened to, like, watch it because I was just curious. And I did not know who he was. I was so confused.
Yeah.
I was so confused.
Yeah, so he makes maybe one or two appearances every year. But John Shannon of Sportsnet tweeted... after the press conference, he said, there's been a lot made publicly today about how Daryl Katz looks After asking a few questions, I can tell you that he has been struggling with a life-threatening bacterial-resistant sinus infection over the past few years. And that was his first tweet. And then he says, in fact, he carried an IV bag 24/7 during the playoff run 2 seasons ago. The infection has a 50-50 survival rate. He's had 3 surgeries over the past 10 months with 1 more surgery to go. It is the primary reason why he hasn't been around Edmonton and the team. So that in itself, I was like, how was that kept quiet for so long?
I know. And that's like not a good thing. I was also shocked to see, so I am not a doctor. I'm not a lot of things. I'm not a doctor, but I don't know anything about like science or medical stuff. So maybe I'm just being stupid, but like, I did not know that sinus infections could just like happen that long. Yeah. I guess if it's bacteria resistant or whatever it was, like that's why, but I was not aware that that could be. Mm-hmm. I've never had a sinus infection, so I don't really know, like, what the situation is. But
yeah, no, it's the sinus infections.
I knew they could last like a couple weeks, but I didn't know they could last like years.
Well, there's different kind of strains that you can get. Like I think there was a point, I think it was like my junior or my senior year of high school. My sinuses are all messed up. Like, that's my next surgery on the list. Like, I have a deviated septum. They need to go in and clean out all of my sinuses. They need to reconstruct my nose. Like, they need to do all that stuff. And when I was in kindergarten, I had surgery to remove my adenoids, which are like little, they're kind of like little, like pieces of like muscle that are in your nose that, are part of the whole, like, the part of the whole system of like decongestion and all that stuff. Mine had a staph infection in them that was blocking, I think it was like 95% of my airways. So staph infections cannot be treated with like antibiotics, can't be treated with anything. It's like a virus.
Right.
So, the adenoids can grow back too. So they've grown back now. But there's no staph infection in them obviously anymore. But there are different strains that you can have. And like his, like he, it sounds like he has something that's along the lines of a staph infection that like it's gotten to the point. Yeah. Like with mine, I had mine in there for probably like a year or two before I had it taken out. Like it was in there for a long time. And so there was a response to this under it, Sheldon Surrey. I want to say he's a former NHL player. He played with the Edmonton Oilers. But he replied to John Shannon's tweet and he said, it's a four tweet thread. So he goes, this is awful. I can relate. Here's a little story for you. After I broke my hand in a fight with Iggy in 2010, Iggy as in Jerome McGinley, and needed pins put in to set the fracture, the Oilers insisted I get surgery done in Edmonton. After some discussion, I agreed. Sometime during the Olympic break, my hand had become infected and I got very sick. I flew back to Edmonton from LA and went to the hospital that night. I had a bad blood and bone infection, which was, he had MRSA, M-R-S-A, he had MRSA.
Oh.
After spending a few days in the ICU and a couple more surgeries later, I was close to having my hand amputated. I spent about 12 weeks on the IV bag with a PIC line on my heart to keep the infection from killing me. During the 10 days in the hospital, I was told that Oilers management, Cates, Kevin, and Tambellini, Kevin Lowe, thought I was milking the injury. When I spoke to the press in April 2010, I still hadn't talked to management. I wasn't mad they didn't check in on me. I was floored that they thought I was using this injury to not play that season. Obviously, the rest history. These infections are real and serious. And then he goes, I hope the worst is behind Daryl Cates. Which
that
is
sucks.
Insane.
Like I've known somebody who's had MRSA, and it's really scary.
It's like flesh eating, right?
Yeah, and it can come on from like the smallest of things.
Yeah.
And it comes out of nowhere and you all of a sudden just have to go to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And you're stuck there.
Yeah.
One of our longtime neighbors, it was actually like the night my mom and stepdad got married. They were supposed to be at the wedding and they couldn't be I think like half of their family came, but they couldn't be at the wedding because their son had MRSA and had to be in the hospital. And, yeah, it's very scary. Like it is.
Yeah. But like for them to like just
say that he's milking it.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
So I looked him up. I looked him up on Hockey Reference. He played 13 years in the NHL. He was 6 years in Montreal, 3 years in New Jersey, 3 years in Edmonton, a year in Dallas, and a year in Anaheim. He played from 1998 to 2013. He finished with 758 games, 109 goals, 191 assists, and 300 points. So he had himself quite a career, but it was that year in Edmonton. It was 2009-10. He was 33 years old that year, and then he got traded. He only played 37 games that year, and then he got traded to Dallas that next year. So
that's crazy.
Yeah, so that's that. And then one other little piece of NHL news from the Toronto Maple Leafs. Travis Dermott will have shoulder surgery. He had it, I think, yesterday, and he will miss a minimum of 6 months. So we won't be seeing him, like... And that, like, they said he's going to miss a minimum of 6 months before he even had the surgery. And, like, knowing how my surgery went and how they were like, oh, 4 to 6 months, and I'm at, like, the six-month mark now, like... I've gone that, like, they're like, oh, some people finish in four, some people finish, like, I'm assuming it's like 6.5, 7 at this point, because yeah. Like, you don't know how each body is gonna, you know, each body is gonna
so many shoulder
react.
Injuries, because that's what
maybe
that's
I should just play in the NHL.
I was gonna call him Travis, but I meant Trevor Van Riemsdyk for the Canes had shoulder surgery last mm-hmm. week too.
It sucks.
Damn. But yeah, that's hard. You don't want to miss that much time, especially because, like, a lot of guys do, like, pretty intense training over the summer. So to not be able to do that, that already puts you behind.
Mm-hmm. That's
like
the,
that absolutely bites. I mean, he probably can still skate, like, towards the end of the summer, I'm guessing. But
yeah.
It's not like he'll be able to practice, like...
Full on. Well, I'm at the point now, I think I'm at, like, 5 months, like, just about to hit... I think I'm about to hit 5 months in a week. So from my surgery. So, I just got the clear to like be able to go back and play hockey. So, yeah. And like, by the time I start, it'll be right around my 6 month of my surgery. So I still have like, I'm not starting until like mid June. So like the way my like doctors and the way my physical therapist put it, it's like, if obviously I'm not an NHL athlete, so it's different for everyone. But like the main thing is, because I asked them, I was like, when can I get back to doing things? Like, when can I get back to like, you know, being active? And she's like, if you want to play hockey again, like you need to be able to be like to fall and be able to catch yourself or like take a hit and be able to like not like know that your shoulder is fine.
Right.
Like there's also like a mental aspect of it. Like, I'm scared about it because I'm afraid I'm going to like go out there and accidentally fall. And then like, I'm just going to rip my arm apart again because like the way my tendon is being held in my arm, it's by like a little wire and like a little like anchor in there. Like, so right. she's like, but they're like, it's in there. Like, it's not, it would have to take something traumatic for it to come undone.
Right.
Like it's
not going to be just like you falling.
Yes. Yeah. So it's like, there's also a mental part of it. And especially when you play in the NHL, when it's, there is hitting and there is that aspect of violence, is that like you need to be mentally okay with the fact that you could go back and play. Like that's a big thing too. So we'll see how that all goes. But that's it for the NHL news. Let's talk about the playoffs. Because we love talking about the playoffs on this podcast.
We sure do. You know what? It's been fun this year though. Like it's funny that you said that the like end of round two was like exciting because I thought it was low-key boring, but
oh my gosh, how did you not like with the San Jose and the Avalanche thing?
I couldn't watch that game.
Okay, well, okay, so let's start in the Eastern Conference. Let's just start, we already talked last week about how the Carolina Hurricanes swept the New York Islanders, so that's done. We talked about
that
already last week.
We're moving on from that one.
Let's talk about Columbus. So Columbus and Boston, that ended in Game 6. The Blue Jackets didn't score a goal in Game 6 after almost... I mean, I thought they dominated pretty much all of the series, but like...
I thought for sure that game was going to go to... Or that series was going to go to 7 because...
Yes.
Both teams seemed like they were really grinding, but for some reason, I don't know. I watched that game, and I still can't really tell you what the Blue Jackets were doing wrong aside from not scoring.
They were playing a great game. They played a great game. They had a lot of chances, too.
They did. Yeah. And I mean, you and I had talked a little bit about this before we went on, but Tuukka Rask, I mean, he's just unbelievable. And, like, Bobrovsky was still, I felt like he was still good in that game. He just, there were, like, a couple where I feel like they were just goals that you can't avoid, which sucks, obviously. Yeah. Yeah. But I was just shocked because I really thought that was going to go to game seven. And John Tortorella's press conference afterwards was hilarious because he's the best.
He was like, we're not talking about it.
He literally just does not care. And I really appreciate that. Like, I really appreciate the fact that he just does not care at all.
Mm-hmm.
And he just says whatever he wants. It's just so funny to me. And I think Boston fans especially were, like, kind of making fun of him for saying that it was going to go to game seven for sure. And then it, you know, didn't. That was kind of funny. And then, like, the whole Bobrovsky thing that's happened over the past, like, day or so, where, like, I guess he already is, like, putting his apartment up for sale in Columbus.
Yeah, wait, can we, yeah, like, can we talk about that really quick?
It's because literally been, like, not even a week. Because that news came out yesterday, I think.
Yes, or maybe I'm looking at it right now.
Yesterday.
I know Chris Johnston retweeted like it. It was yesterday.
That game was on Monday, right?
Yeah, the Columbus game? No, that game was on Monday. Monday, May 6th. Okay. Yeah.
So literally, like, it didn't even take him a full week before he was like, bye, I'm leaving. Never coming back. I'm like, jeez.
If you guys too, I just looked at the tweet from, it's from Aaron Portsline. He covers the Blue Jackets for The Athletic. He posted the story about it. Chris Johnson retweeted it, but he posted the story about it. I'll have Megan throw it in on the Twitter. There's a YouTube link that is like a tour of his apartment. So if any of you live in Columbus and want to spend $2.95 million on Sergei Bobrovsky's condo, feel free to go ahead. But yeah, like, that's okay. Also about Columbus, this is also on the lighter side. Can we talk about their Nashville, like, extravaganza that they had over the weekend? Like, I don't know.
That was so funny.
Like, okay, so Josh Anderson posted one about an hour ago of all of the guys too. But, like, they all wore cowboy hats and they all went to a honky tonk on Broadway. And, like, Matt Duchesne at some point was singing Whiskey Glasses and, like, David Savard
kind of
in this picture. In this picture, like, they're having the time of their lives. So
you know what though, they, in all honesty, I think they should be really proud of where they got because nobody thought they were going to beat Tampa.
Right.
I think a good amount of people thought they were going to get swept by the Bruins, and they didn't get swept. I mean, they didn't win, which kind of sucks. But
they didn't get swept.
Franchise history by getting past the first round.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think they should be proud of it. It sucks. And I really wanted them to go far because I really wanted the wild card chaos squad to.
Oh, yeah.
To dominate. I wanted them to be the last four. Obviously, that didn't happen. But, yeah, I was really pulling for them. As much as I like the Bruins, I really wanted the Blue Jackets to pull it off. And
yeah.
You know, it sucks because I really think they could have with how hot they were. But I think that, like, it was like a 10 or 11 day break between them sweeping and them playing Boston.
Yeah.
So that sucks to have that much rest. I mean, I know rest is sometimes a good thing. Like, I think with the Hurricanes, it was kind of a good thing, even though they didn't. It was clear in the first period. We'll talk about it later. But they didn't quite have their feet under them. And I think the same thing happened to Columbus.
Right.
It's just a matter of, like, picking it back up as soon as you can. And I just don't think Columbus picked it up quickly enough, fortunately, which bites. But, like those videos, like, they're obviously a close group of guys, at least the ones that are,
like, funny.
Like,
it was insane. So, I want to see, I don't know who posted the video of Duchesne singing, but it was probably, like, one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
It was so funny. I think it was on somebody's Instagram story, though. So it's probably gone.
Oh, it was an Instagram story. Yeah,
I think
so
it was Josh Anderson's Instagram story, but I'm sure we could unearth it somewhere.
I was gonna say he has one highlight bubble on his Twitter, and it's from 38 weeks ago, so that doesn't help me, Josh. But it was Anthony Duclair, Ryan Murray, Boone Jenner, David Savard, Josh Anderson, Keith Kincaid, Cam Atkinson, Nick Foligno, and Matt Duchene. So that was a pretty fun group. Sad to see them go, but there's gonna be some big changes coming to the off season for there. They've got a lot of free agents that they've gotta
figure out what they're gonna do with. I think
yeah,
I
I
would
have them.
say, like, semi definitively that Panarin and Bobrovsky, well, I'll say definitively that those two are gone, but I think they've had a pretty good chance of signing Matt Duchene. He clearly likes it, and I mean,
They
I don't
have
know, but I don't know
Sergei.
what they'll do with, like, Dzingel.
So they have Sergei Bobrovsky, they got Matt Duchene, Artemi Panarin, and then they have Adam McQuaid, Ryan Dzingel, and Keith Kincaid. Those are all of their UFAs this season, or this year. So Sergei makes, I mean, Matt Duchene makes $6 million right now. Dzingel makes 1.8. So I think out of any of them, and like Keith Kincaid makes 1.25, McQuaid makes 2.75 million. So like, I think Matt Duchene could probably be your first order of business and get him signed, and then I don't care for McQuaid. Like, you can get rid of McQuaid, get rid of Kincaid. Like, I mean, you can keep Kincaid because you're getting rid of Bobrovsky
That's
and
what
you
I was
have
kind of thinking,
Korpisalo,
and I
but
think that was kind of their thinking too. And I think Kincaid is fine. So it'll be interesting to see what they do because, yeah, you're right. Like, they're gonna have to either find a different goalie on the market, which is gonna be kind of hard, or stick with Korpisalo and somebody from their AHL team. I don't know their system well enough to, like, give you a name, aside from maybe that, like, Elvis kid.
Yeah,
His
he's an
last name, I think he
option.
starts with an M.
Yeah, it starts with an M. I can't. It's like some
If you
foreign last
want
name.
to, you know, stick with that, I mean, I think Korpisalo is a fine goalie. Like, I don't think he's perfect, but or like really, really good or anything, but I think he's fine. I think they'd be perfectly fine with him as their starter next year. I think he kind of reads to me as like a Scott Darling type, where he, like, has the potential to be a number one. It's just a matter of him proving himself to be one.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
So we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. So let's talk about let's go over to the Western Conference because both games in the Western Conference in the second round went 2-7. Let's start with Colorado and San Jose because I want to talk about St. Louis Dallas last. But let's talk about Colorado San Jose first. Oh, I can hear the rain now. Is it raining by you? Is that you?
No.
Oh
Oh,
no.
is it?
I can hear it. Like, I just heard it. Is it raining?
No.
No? Okay, maybe then it's
You know what? That
just.
might have been my air conditioning turning
I
on.
was gonna say, I heard something and I was like, whoa, that is a lot of rain.
I think that's my air conditioning.
Okay,
That's so funny, though.
let's talk about San Jose, Colorado, and let's talk about the call that went San Jose's way after Gabriel Landeskog was called for being offside, and Colin Wilson's goal right after was called back. I was listening to the 31 Thoughts podcast yesterday with Jeff Merrick and Elliot Friedman. And Elliot Friedman was saying, he was saying that Gabe Landeskog is probably going to get all the respect and probably every call from here on out the rest of his NHL career. Because if any of you listened to his post-game scrum, he didn't put the blame on any of the refs. He didn't put the blame on anybody else. He put the blame, like, on himself. And that's just a very captain thing to do, and that's a very Gabe
It is.
Landeskog thing to do. He's always been that respectful and that kind of guy that won't throw anybody under the bus. But Elliot was saying, like, because of that, he's going to have the respect of all of the refs in the league from here on out. Like, he's going to be. So that's tough because if that goal counted and they didn't have to go back and, like, onion slice all of these reviews now, which I think the like I feel like the video review on some plays is great because on plays where it's, like, egregious that it's supposed to go the other way. But, like, when you take it on the littlest of things and, like, everyone points to the Matt Duchene, oh, not overtime, Matt Duchene offside call 5 years ago in the playoffs, and why this whole thing started and why you can overturn offside calls and everything like that. It would have been a 2-2 game and it would have been completely different and you don't know how it could have ended. And this is the second series, or I was saying this to Megan too before, this is the second series where they have gotten, San Jose has gotten a call in game seven that completely turned the tide for them, and they won the game with Vegas's 5-minute major in the first round, and then this call in the second round. And like, not to take anything away from the San Jose Sharks, you know, like Joe Pavelski came back after not playing the entire series and
scored
in that game.
That was a nice goal too.
Yeah. And he scored twice, and
yeah.
Not to take anything away from that, but also like Colorado, like that's not a call that should change the course of a game, I guess. Like, I understand why they did it because like he didn't get off fast enough or whatever. Like the door wasn't open on the bench or whatever, but
right.
I just, the officiating this year has just been
so bad,
not great. And that's a call that could have gone Colorado's way, and who knows, it could have been a 2-2 game and it could have ended differently. I mean, San Jose still could have won and gone on, but I think it would have been more fair on Colorado's side of it. So that being said, San Jose does move on. But Colorado, I think Colorado is really set for the future, and they've got a lot of good guys on that team. We have a really small sample size with Cale Makar so far, but he looks like he's going to be legit. You got Nathan MacKinnon, who I would honestly put Nathan MacKinnon, like, if you ask people the best players in the world, you're going to get either a Connor McDavid or a Sidney Crosby answer. That's just how it goes. But I would put Nathan MacKinnon in that conversation. You got Mikko Rantanen, who had a coming out party this year. You got Gabe Landeskog, who's still having a great year. And then you got a couple other guys, like depth guys. Like you got JT Compher, who's really great. Tyson Jost, who had a really, really, really tough regular season, bounced around from the NHL to the AHL, and came and scored three straight in the playoffs for his first ever three straight goal appearance of his career. And they have a couple free agents. They have Semyon Varlamov, Derek Brassard, Colin Wilson, who I think you need to re-sign, Patrick Nemeth, and Gabriel Bork, who is also proven to be pretty, I mean, he had in 55 games, he only had 8 points, but give him some time, I think he could be a great player. But I don't know, the future looks really good for the Colorado Avalanche, so I feel like fans can sit back and kind of be like, okay, that was a good season. It was tough how the way it ended, but I think they had a pretty good year, pretty good playoff run too.
I was kind of upset because I like the Sharks. Like they're like my top tier of teams I like. So I was like not too bummed about the fact that they won, but it like also sucked because I don't know. I just feel like, and I know like Gary Bettman keeps like saying, oh, there's a parity in the league and whatever. Like there's like, it's going to be a toss up on like what team wins and stuff. And I get that to an extent, but like literally all signs at this point are pointing towards a Boston San Jose final. And that is not parity.
Yeah.
That is two really good teams, and that's fine. Like I have nothing wrong with that, but it's like decidedly less fun when it's two really good teams.
Yes, I agree.
Give me the Cinderella story. Like, and I didn't talk about that, like, last week or 2 weeks ago, whenever that was. That's why these playoffs, like, the first round was so much fun because literally every team that wasn't supposed to make it made it.
Mm-hmm.
And, I was excited because I was like, oh, the second round's going to be awesome. And then maybe the reason I didn't like the second round is because it didn't go the way I wanted it to.
I was going to say, it's probably because
now that I'm, like, hearing myself talk about it. I mean, it's like, it's fine. Like, honestly, out of the eight teams that were left, like, there weren't any of them that I was really upset about.
I was upset about Colorado. I really, really, really like Colorado. And that's like, as of late, like, it's probably like the last season or two that I really jumped on their bandwagon. And I was like, I love the Colorado Avalanche. But also, like, I think that also is in part of, like, the way they treat their fans and the way that like their social media team in particular,
so good.
Like I went to Denver 2 summers ago and obviously it's the middle of July. So the start of the July. So hockey is not on, but I was like, I'm going to go out on a limb. I went on Tumblr and I sent them an ask. Like I sent the Colorado Avalanche an ask and I was like, hey, I'm coming to Denver for a week and a half. Like, what's fun to do in Denver? And of course they said the whole, like, you should visit like the Pepsi Center, you can do a tour, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But they sent me like a full on list of like, hey, go to Red Rocks Amphitheater and hey, go do a hike here and hey, go see this and see a Rockies game and do this and do that. And like, they always reply to me on Twitter. They always are good with their fans. Like, they're so funny. They just treat people really, really well. And that drew me to them at first. And then I started to know the team and I was like, this team is fun. This team is really, really fun to watch. And, you know, after the Matt Duchene trade, a couple years ago, Joe Sakic was kind of looked at as like, he kind of tarnished his GM reputation, I guess, after that. But now it's certainly paying off because you get ousted in the second round in game 7, but you still have the 4th and 16th pick in the first round of the NHL draft this
like,
year.
That's like, pretty good.
You're doing all right, son. You're doing all right.
Yeah,
so
I just, I think it was one of those things where like I was going to be fine with either team advancing, but I was disappointed because I felt like Colorado was kind of gypped of a chance. Not saying that they like, and to put this into perspective, because I've heard this kind of bounced around when people complain about calls saying that like, well, you don't know that they would have won. Well, no, you don't know that they would have won. The Sharks could have come back and scored like 8 goals, whatever.
Right.
But you're taking away a team's chance.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what bugs me. And like, yes, like obviously the Avalanche could have, you know, they could have tried harder to score or whatever you want to, you know, change the narrative. But it just sucks because you change the outcome of a game, but changing the outcome of a series is frustrating. And we saw that with Vegas and like Vegas and the Sharks. And I don't know. It just honestly like, saw it a little bit with the Bruins and Columbus as well, where like I think it was like the waning seconds of the game, but Brad Marchand like punched somebody in the back of the head and then skated away and got away with it, didn't face any kind of suspension. I honestly think if he'd been suspended the next game, they would have taken it to game 7, and that's not even me being like hypothetical. I think it would have happened.
Yeah,
and that it's just frustrating when you miss a call or when you call something that shouldn't have been a call and you've changed the momentum of the game and you change the outcome of the game. That's you're interfering too much as a referee, in my opinion. And it's just like these playoffs have gotten to the point where unless somebody is seriously injured or unless something is blatantly a call, let them play. Like you don't need to call every single tiny thing.
Right.
Like, it just, and we'll get to it in a minute when we talk about the Hurricanes, but like that game was just a mess.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me so mad because the refs didn't know what they were calling.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's kind of been the narrative throughout these whole playoffs is that the refs just don't know what they're calling and they're calling things that aren't, that really aren't penalties and they're calling things that, or they're not calling things that should be penalties. And you're I don't want to say you're ruining the game, but you're ruining the game.
Yeah, like I don't like how down to the wire it gets like with reviewing stuff. Like,
it
kind of takes away like I don't know. It takes away the fun of the game.
It does.
Know? Like,
because then I'm sitting there like, well, okay, now you know this team has like a huge power play that they're probably going to score on and gain some momentum, and it's like that's fine. But if the penalty wasn't actually a penalty, then you're skewing the game.
You're breaking it down. You're nitpicking it, which is just
exactly
beyond annoying.
Stupid. Like, don't, because the problem too is when they nitpick, it's not even like they nitpick equally. Like they make they've been making just dumb calls that don't make any sense on either side of all of these games, and I'm like, as a fan, I'm sitting here confused because I mean I obviously don't have a rule book in front of me while I'm watching a game, but maybe they should start having one in front of them because some of the stuff they call just doesn't make any sense and some of the stuff they miss, like I just don't understand. Like, I don't know, I don't want to beat a dead horse, but it's just incredibly frustrating and it's getting more frustrating. And I swear to God, if this whole thing comes down to a bad call in the finals, I'm going to be furious. I don't care which teams are there.
Mm-hmm.
But if that whole, if all of that accumulates into a bad call, letting one team win.
And that's what you remember. Like, that's the toughest part, is that, like, that's what you remember. Like, when I think back on that game seven between Vegas and San Jose, I don't think about how great each side played, like, because that entire game was great. Well, yeah. I think about that 5-minute major when it just totally turned everything around. You know, like, when I think about this game seven between Colorado and San Jose, I'm going to think about Gabe Landeskog being a little bit offside. You know, like, I think that's what you think about, and that's what's kind of put onto that game or that series, and that sucks because that's not what you should remember. You should remember you should remember the hockey.
You should remember the actual game.
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
It's just, like when the refs change the game, that's when I get frustrated. Like, I get that they're human and they can't make every right call. I completely understand that. But when it's the playoffs and things are on the line, and it's the difference between a team winning a series and losing a series, you mm-hmm. need to be diligent. I'm sorry.
And well, the thing is, too, like, these refs are the best at what they do. And they've been doing it for a long time. Like, it's not like a rookie's being thrown in there like they do in the regular. Like, they've been doing it for a long time. Dan O'Halloran, who has been the ref in the conference finals for the past decade and then some, is not working anymore because of that call. He made that major call in that Vegas game. He was one of those refs. Like, they're the best at what they do. So while I get, like, giving them benefit of the doubt for, like, okay, yeah, you make a wrong call every once in a while, you need to make the right call. This is the situation, the playoffs. Like, this is the stage where you need to make the best decision you can. And they put refs in those situations that have been there before, that know what they're doing, that they can trust. And when they go out for this reason, for this exact reason, to avoid stuff like this. And it's happening over and over, game after game game.
And, like, now, you know, listen to us. Like, it's all anybody's talking about because the reffing has just been all over the place in every game. Like, that's the thing. It'd be one thing if it was just one series or just, like, one team. But it literally, like, none of these calls make any semblance of sense.
No.
Like
the Charlie McAvoy, like the Charlie McAvoy hit at the end of the at the
on
end
Josh
of the,
Anderson.
Yes, on Josh Anderson, and he got a game for it. But in the game, I mean,
wasn't a penalty. Which
it
I'm
was
like,
a two. No, it was a 2-minute minor. It
was
a 2-minute
minor. Yeah,
but he should have gotten a game misconduct in a 5-minute major.
Yep.
Yeah.
I just don't understand. Like, if you're going to call stuff, fine. I think things need to be called, obviously. Like, if somebody gets high-sticked, needs to be called. If somebody gets tripped, needs to be called. If somebody gets boarded, needs to be called. I get it. But you don't have to make every single call, and you don't have to, like, you don't have to make it equal.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't have to give this team so many power play minutes and this team so many power play minutes or try and make it, like, somewhat balanced. Don't. Like, you're just going to mess it up.
Right.
You're going to mess it up.
Right.
And it doesn't make hockey fun. I guarantee you it does not make hockey fun. It makes it frustrating.
Yeah.
And for somebody who loves watching hockey, it's not fun when this game is frustrating.
Exactly. With that being said, let's toss it over to St. Louis, Dallas, because that was probably one of the best game sevens I've ever seen in my entire life. Despite,
I'm so mad I missed over. So
despite Dallas having one shot in the second,
I stayed up for the first overtime, and then I was like, I need to go to bed. I have work tomorrow morning, early tomorrow morning, and I woke up literally in the worst mood because of this. And
hey, you still need to be nice.
I know. I was just not happy because I wanted the Stars to win because I like the Stars.
I know.
It's not because of the Blues. It's because I wanted the Stars to win.
The hockey gods are always listening, Megan.
I know. But I'm going to find something nice to say. Hold on.
This is really hard for her.
Their goalie is really good.
Oh.
Jordan Binnington.
That was really hard for her, folks. Please appreciate the effort that took.
Yeah, please put the effort. I put a lot of effort into that comment. Thank you very much. You know what I will say, though? I actually do really like Vladimir Tarasenko, and I don't... It's really random, but I actually do legitimately very much like him.
Yeah. There's guys on that roster, like, I really like Tyler Bozak a lot, just because, well, also that's because he played on the Leafs. But I like Braden Schenn. I like Tarasenko too, even though it kind of pains me to say it. Like, I like Alex Pietrangelo, who I know you are not very fond of, but I love Alex Pietrangelo.
It's fine. Everything is fine.
But that overtime period was spectacular. Okay. Ben Bishop, I think Ben Bishop, like he's Ben Bishop is from St. Louis, so I think there was something that was a little something extra in that game for him.
I agree.
But he played, he made 52 saves. 52 saves.
That's insane.
He played incredible.
The one thing about this game that made me mad though was when Ben Bishop took a puck to like, it was either his mask or his shoulder to the point where he was down.
Yeah.
Like he was on the ice. That wasn't this game. No, that was game six. It was game six.
Mm-hmm.
It was not the game seven, but it was the reason it went to game seven. Got it.
Yeah.
There was a Blues player took a shot and it either hit Ben Bishop in the mask or it hit him in the shoulder, but it hit him hard enough that he fell on his back and could not get up. And then another Blues player took the puck and put it in the goal, and the refs counted it as a good goal.
That was the overtime goal.
That was
Pat Maroon's goal. He took a shot.
No. It wasn't that one. It was the one I'm talking about. The one that happened. It was like a midday game.
Oh, I thought you were talking about
the one in game six. Game six.
Oh, okay. I was like, no, that one counted.
It was game six, but it tied up the game for the Blues, and then they ended up scoring again like a minute later, and it's just so frustrating because Dallas played really well that game and Ben Bishop was playing really well. I just don't think that should have counted as a goal. Like, if your goalie is on the ice and clearly injured, the other team, I don't care. And I know that the rule, apparently, I literally think that the NHL just makes up rules as it goes, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
But the rule was that, I guess, because the Blues maintained possession, it was okay. I don't like that, but fine. That literally makes zero sense to me. If the goalie is down, I don't care what team he plays for. If the goalie is down and he cannot get up, whatever puck goes into the net should not count.
Yeah.
The refs should have blown the whistle and they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And they ended up counting it as a good goal, which makes absolutely zero sense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, Ben Bishop was clearly not getting up. Like, the medical trainer had to come out on the ice and help him get back up. So that one made me mad because Dallas was winning that game and they had a pretty good handle on the game, I thought.
Right.
But that completely shifted the momentum of the game because, like I said, the Blues scored like a minute or two later and I was like, well, I guess you're going to game seven.
Well, this is great. Everything's great.
That's what I'm talking about. Like, refs just, like, the whole, like, calling thing. I'm like clapping because I'm so mad. They've completely butchered this playoff season and it's just making me a little mad.
Are you a little mad, Megan? Are you a little upset?
A little mad about it. Like, and again, both sides here. Like, it's happened on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's a team I like or a team I don't like, I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
The calls have just been bad across the board. Like, There really weren't a whole lot of teams in this playoff season that I didn't like out of the 16 teams.
Mm-hmm.
There were like a handful that I was like, if you lost, I'd be okay with that.
Right.
You know, kind of thing. But yeah, I was just, it made me so, so mad because that just should not have counted as a goal. And I know that wasn't the game seven one, but it was game six and it made it go to game seven. So
yeah.
It was just incredibly frustrating. And then I guess the Stars came out after in their media day, like their locker room clean out like 2 days ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess like Hintz had been playing with like a broken foot.
Yeah.
I think Janmark's foot was also hurt. Janmark's her foot was also, he broke it earlier in the season and I don't think it ever fully healed.
Mm-hmm.
They said that like Zuccarello had still been dealing with issues from his broken arm from against the Blackhawks earlier in the season.
He was getting injections.
Yeah, he was getting like injections before every game, which mm-hmm. sounds terrible.
Yeah. Like cortisone. Like hard shots. Like it's not and like oh. And he so Zuccarello too is a free agent. So I think they have a pretty good chance of re-signing him this offseason too. Yeah.
It just, and this is a whole nother can of worms, but, and I'm not going to go like too into it, but I just feel like if a player is that injured, they should not be playing. I don't care if it's game seven of the Stanley Cup finals. and it's a tie game, I don't care. They should not be playing if they are that injured. That is just so stupid to me. And I get it that like 95% of the time it's the player saying that they're fine and they can play through it. But at that point, like, you need to just... That's like when Patrice Bergeron played through like a punctured lung or something. Like, that is just incredibly stupid.
Well,
and I get it. I really get it that they're competitive and they want to play in these big games. Totally understand. I'm competitive and I would want to play in those games. But it just feels like there's a point where I feel like either the organization or the medical staff should jump in and say, hey, like, you need to not.
Well, I feel like sometimes too, like, not that these players are lying to their medical staff. I wouldn't say they're lying, but I think they don't make it seem like it's as bad as it is. Like, right. when I had my stress fracture in my spine, I got it it was the end of my freshman year, and we were playing at nationals, and like I had pain in my back for maybe 4 or 5 months before we were doing so well. We were 9-0 on the first 3 days of nationals that I was like, well, there's no way I'm not playing. Like, I feel like that when you're in that situation, that's not an option. Like, not playing just becomes just totally an option. And I jumped, swung, fell down, and lost feeling in my legs because I went too hard and I completely ruined my back. And then I was out for 7-8 months after that. So, like,
that's the thing is, like, I just feel like,
but it's not an option in the moment. It's not an option, you know,
I get that. It just sucks because this happens every single year where guys are like, yeah, I was basically dead playing, but it's fine. And
it's hockey, man. It's hockey.
I mean, I applaud them for playing because you look at a lot of other leagues and guys, especially, like, I hate calling out soccer like this, but I'm going to do it. Like, soccer, like, a guy could break a toenail and he'd be like, I'm out. I can't play for 5 games. Like, it's...
Yep.
And even basketball is kind of that way. And oh, yeah. I think that's a little bit of the reason why I don't particularly like watching either of those sports is just because I feel like most of the players are whiny and don't... They're entitled,
right?
To be honest, that's a different conversation for a different day. But I feel like that's kind of where football is similar. Where I feel like football's a little bit. I know the NFL is a little bit more staunch on players playing through injuries. Mm-hmm. They don't typically let it happen. Like, usually, if they're even thinking a guy is hurt, they send him to the locker room, and he's usually not back. At least not for that game, but. I just think, like, I get it. I fully understand. It's always hard to hear it after a team's run ends and you hear how many injuries they have and how many they played through. And you've got guys like Martinook has been playing through an injury this whole, like, playoff season. And it's clearly bothering me. He wasn't at practice today. It'll be interesting to see if he draws into the lineup tomorrow against the Bruins, but
it's like Zach Hyman played 3 games on a torn ACL.
Yeah. Exactly.
And they let him play like that's what they do. Like,
that's ridiculous.
Like I know manage minutes, bro. Like Mike Babcock, don't put Zach Hyman out there for a defensive zone draw when you have like Austin Matthews who could do that, or John Tavares who could do that.
The whole, like, Austin Matthews only playing 18 minutes made me so mad. I've never been more mad about a team that I don't... It's not like I don't care about the Leafs. I like them because you like them, so I just kind of follow them by, like, second hand. But, like, oh my God. Austin Matthews is one of the best players in the game. Why don't you let him play more? Bench the other guys. Who cares about... I don't even know
but how... But no! Freddie Gauthier! Frederick Gauthier needs to play. Like, oh, it's frustrating. We're not going to get into that because I'm going to get pissed. We're not going to get into that.
Well, I know, but I saw it and I was like, and people keep kind of rehashing it. I'm like, oh my God, it's just so stupid. But like, you're right. Like, if a guy's hurt, like, let him, if he wants to play, cut his minutes. Yeah. I know it's probably going to piss him off, but you can't let a guy play with a broken foot. Like, it just, first of all, it sounds terrible. I have a very low pain tolerance. So me playing there, I've literally had a bruised knee for like 2 weeks and I'm miserable. And I mean, it's like hella bruised. Like, it's not just kind of bruised. Like, I probably messed it up more than I think I did, but it's fine. I'm not an athlete. I don't do anything physical. I walk around Target. That's about it. But yeah, it just, that just makes me so like, I get it. And I really do appreciate the fact that they want to provide for their team. They want to be a part of it. I get it.
It's hockey, there's, baby.
There's a limit, dude.
It's hockey,
there is
baby.
A limit. The one that always gets me is the Patrice Bergeron one where he played through a punctured
lung. Wayne Gretzky played with 4 broken ribs.
Like, Jesus, like, don't do that to yourself. That sounds terrible.
It's for the cup, baby. It's for the cup. But let's just talk real quick. Let's wrap this up, and then we'll talk about worlds. Eastern Conference Final is between Carolina Hurricanes and the Boston Bruins. Boston's up 1-0 after they, I think it was, like, what, 5-2 the other night? And then game one of the Western Conference Final between the St. Louis Blues and the San Jose Sharks is on tonight, which is Saturday. So by the time you hear this podcast, it'll already been played, hopefully. San Jose wins. I don't know. I want San Jose and Boston in the final, but that's just me because, you know, the whole Joe Thornton thing. But then also someone brought up the for the Eastern Conference final, Dougie Hamilton shoving it in Boston's face. So I thought
that'd
be.
Did you see him waving at the Boston bench?
No.
Oh my God. There's a gif of him doing that. I don't even know why he was doing it, but he was like waving at the Boston bench. I'm like, oh my God. And the storyline around that confuses me because supposedly he's like not liked in most locker rooms. Like the Bruins didn't like him and the Flames didn't like him. And it's funny because the Canes seem to love him.
Yeah.
And Canes fans love him, obviously. And I don't know. That's just so funny to me because
he played 3 years in Boston. So that's where he started his career. He was drafted
like,
by Boston.
Yeah, he was drafted by them. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't scream to me as a player that would be an issue.
Right.
I don't know him, so I don't obviously like I don't know anything. But it's just weird because he doesn't I don't know.
Yep.
He just doesn't scream like locker room cancer to me, but
whatever. No, neither it doesn't scream that to me either.
In my mind, and if anything, I guess I could see maybe that it's because he's I don't want to say he's awkward, but he just seems a little bit more introverted than I feel like the normal hockey player is. Like,
right.
He doesn't seem the type to go out and party and stuff, which kind of seems like Boston's thing, which is cool. Like, whatever. But I feel like that's, like, a little bit of a part of it. But, yeah, that series I think will be fun.
Right.
But it's not after a great start, mostly because of crappy calls.
Well, and I also think, too, it's, like, the whole, like, Carolina had a ton of time off, you know, like people are like, that doesn't play into it, but it plays into it. Like when you're not in the action every other day,
it does.
God,
I'm sorry. My dog just yawned. You could tell the first period and like most of the second, they just did not look like they had their legs under them yet. And, they kind of looked like that in the first game against the Islanders too. So hopefully they like pick it up. I'm hopeful, and it's funny because my stepdad and my mom, before the series started, they asked me, like, you know, who I thought was going to win and in how many games. And I was like, I think it'll go to, like, 6 or 7 games. And they were like, but who are you picking? I'm like, I don't want to pick.
I don't want to.
I don't want to pick.
Here's
so
the thing. I don't pick.
I don't pick. I'm just going to, like, let it happen. You know, because at this point, I'm gonna be disappointed if the Hurricanes don't make it past this round. But at the same time, as I'm sure most Hurricanes fans are, I am so proud of them for getting even as far as they are. So Everything past them beating Washington in the first round has just been a cherry on top. So we'll see. I think it'll be a fun series. I think the Blues and the Sharks will be a fun series too. That one I think will be a little bit more hard hitting. The Hurricanes don't really like, I don't want to say that they're not like a hitting team, but that was kind of their issue with the Capitals is that they didn't play like
they're not very aggressive. They're not very aggressive in that regard.
I feel
regard.
Like Boston can be, but I think the Hurricanes are a little bit more skill based rather than physical. Whereas I feel like Blues and the Sharks are both mildly physical teams, so that I think that'll be a grind of a series. So I think that's enough. I think that one will go to 7 for sure. I'd be very surprised if it didn't. But it'll be fun, and I'm excited to catch it tonight because, you know, it's Saturday, so I can actually stay up late to watch it. It's a miracle.
And something I wanted to mention too before we wrap this up, from the St. Louis Dallas Game 7. If any of you have not seen it or read it or heard about it, Pat Maroon from St. Louis took a lot less to play in St. Louis to be by his son. I don't know if any of you had followed him the year before when he was in Edmonton and he scored a goal in a game in St. Louis with his son in the crowd and he got even emotional about that. Scored the overtime winner in Game 7 to send him to the Western Conference Final, and they showed his kid, I think he's 11 years old, showed his son in the crowd, and his son is just crying, just bawling. Pat Maroon starts crying. They have pictures of them in the locker room, and like, it's just a very, very special and touching story. And I mean, I admire Pat Maroon. I mean, you're playing in the NHL anywhere you can, so like, I don't blame him for, you know, taking less to play somewhere else, but I admire him for doing that. And like, that is just a very, very heartwarming story, and how his son reacted. I think he said his son was interviewed. He got asked a couple questions, but he was like, you know, I was sitting, he said he was sitting looking at the program, like looking at where all the players were from, and he saw his dad, like when he read his dad was from St. Louis, and then everyone started getting so excited and yelling, and he looked up and his friend was sitting next to him, and his friend was like, "That's your dad scored. It was your dad." So, it was really cool. And then he just started crying. So,
I remember seeing that. That was all over my Twitter timeline the next morning of,
just so sweet.
Of this kid. And it is sweet. It's very sweet.
All right, let's move on before you start losing your mind. Let's move on to Worlds. So, as I mentioned earlier, this is when we're going to be bringing back some of the Blackhawks talk. So, yesterday was May 10th. It was Friday. That's when Worlds started. The official tournament started after playing some exhibition games there. But it's over in Slovakia. So, we have 13 Blackhawks representing 10 different countries. The USA has Alex DeBrincat and Patrick Kane. Sweden has Erik Gustafsson and Markus Kruger. Canada has Dylan Strome. Finland has Henri Jokiharju and Kevin Lankinen. Germany has Dominic Cahoon. Russia has Artem Anisimov, who scored yesterday. And Norway has Andreas Martensen. And then as for prospects, Switzerland has Filip Kurashev. The Czech Republic has Dominic Kubalik, who we got from LA earlier this year. And then Denmark has Matthias Fromm. So the tournament runs from the 10th to the 26th. Before the tournament started, we got news that John Tavares will miss for Team Canada due to an oblique injury, and it came out today that he will miss about a month of off-season training, so hopefully he feels better soon. And then also...
This makes me sound like an idiot.
What?
But I had to ask because I forgot to look it up before in the podcast. I don't even want to say it. And this is why I'm not an athlete, and
well,
I'm
you
not
need
like
to...
a doctor or anything.
Well, now
where is that?
Where's your oblique?
Yes.
It's like
your leg, right?
It's like, hold on. I'll show you in a second. Hold on. It's like, it's in your abs. So it's like on the side of your abs.
Oh.
So it's like,
I thought it was in your legs.
No,
I'm literally such an idiot. I can't, literally muscles. I don't know where any muscles are except for biceps. That's literally it.
No,
I know where my biceps are and that's it.
Your obliques are like right on the side of your abs. Like they're like on the sides of your body.
Like, that
it does, like I've injured my oblique, I've strained it before, and it's like,
that's a no for me.
It's tough, like it really hurts. So yeah, no, so I was like, as soon as you said that, I kind of knew that you're gonna ask. Like,
I'm so sorry. I to all of you people listening, if you haven't realized it yet, when it comes to medical things and like muscle things and tears and everything, I have no idea where any of this stuff is. I just kind of like nod and go along with it. So I'm sorry for the dumb question.
No, nothing's a dumb question. You know, like there was a point where I didn't know where anything was. And now, like, since I was an athlete, I had to know how to take care of my body. So like, you know, see, that's, yeah. So that's on that happened with John Tavares. And then John Klingberg, since Dallas was knocked out in the second round, he will be joining Team Sweden next week. That was mentioned on the broadcast yesterday during USA and Slovakia. So opening day scores, Finland beats Canada 3-1. Russia beat Norway 5-2. The USA lost to Slovakia 4-1, and the Czech Republic won over Sweden 5-2. So there were a couple upsets there. I thought Canada would win for sure. Russia, I knew would win anyway, so that one's a given. And then I thought Sweden would beat Czech Republic, but apparently not. So we'll see. This tournament runs for 16 more days. So we'll see how it goes. A lot can happen. But just a couple things. Kako scored two goals in Finland's win over Canada, and both of them. Well, the one of them was disgusting. If any of you have not watched it, we'll link it down below. We'll find a link to it. Oh my God, it's disgusting. And then Jack Hughes opened on a line with Patrick Kane and JVR. And then he also was playing out on the ice with his brother Quinn. So it was funny during the broadcast, like every 5 minutes, it'd be like, and then it goes to Jay Hughes, and Jay Hughes back to Q Hughes, and Q Hughes to Jay Hughes. And like he had to say, like, he had to differentiate which Hughes was holding the puck, because, I mean, it's not that hard to recognize, because Jack still has the cage. Yeah, so he actually, I'm going to look it up right now. He turns 18 this week, I'm pretty sure. So yeah, at midway through this tournament, he's going to be he'll be able to wear a visor, which will be so weird to see, but I'm going to look it up right now, cuz let's see, Jack Hughes. There we go. Okay, you're going to take 10 years to load. Thank you, Elite Prospects. May 14th. So 3 days, he'll be 18. So
Tuesday.
Yeah, so Tuesday. So that'll be pretty fun. But it's you know which Hughes is which, especially because Jack wears number 6 and Quinn wears 43. So, like, you can definitely tell in the numbers,
they're
too.
Their numbers are different.
But the next game for both U.S. and Canada, those are the two that I've been focusing on. USA plays France on Monday, or no, tomorrow, Sunday, and then Canada plays Great Britain also tomorrow too, which I wanted to see Brendan Perlini play on Great
Me
Britain.
Me too! I was thinking that too!
That would be
so
cool.
They had a team, and I was like, wait, hold on, what? I didn't know that they
It's the first time they're in it in like a couple
That's
of years.
What I
yeah.
That's what I remember seeing, and I was like, where is Pearls? Where is my boy? He's out golfing somewhere. I saw his like snap, or his Instagram story a couple days ago where he's like
playing
golfing.
Some golf
or watching
out there with
soccer.
Fred. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Like, I mean, props to him for just chilling. I, you know, not gonna argue that. I would chill too if I'd been playing
for however long. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Like 6 months.
Right. Yeah.
Longer than that.
So yeah. So if any of you don't have, oh wow, Switzerland beat Italy today 9-0. I was gonna say, if any of you want to follow Worlds, not just watching it on a stream, but like being able to follow it along on the app, you can download the IIHF app. It's on both. I have it on my iPhone and our iPad, and it's a pretty cool way to be able to see all of the scores and watch highlights and get notifications. And they have a ton of podcasts too, so you can get recaps in the form of like audio and stuff like that. So it's really cool. Check it out. We're going to be following Worlds on the podcast as it's happening.
Yep.
All right. Let's talk about power plays. Megan, would you like to explain?
So because I kind of stole your power play last week by accident, I figured I would bypass mine this go around. Also because I couldn't think of anything.
I was going to say, get to the real reason why, Megan.
I just couldn't think of anything that I haven't already talked about. Like, there's just, it's gotten to that point in the season where I don't want to rehash stuff. And, you know, I probably could have made one about like how bad the reffing was, but I went on that rant earlier in the podcast and I don't want to beat a dead horse. So I will let you take the reins on this one, buddy.
Okay. All right. Tell me when you're ready.
You are good to go whenever you are ready.
All right. I'm good.
Okay.
Okay. This week, I think I've talked about this before, but it's something that's come up a lot, especially with, I listen to the Steve Dangle podcast, like religiously. That's kind of come out with Steve too, as well. And that is social media. And just how just toxic it can be. I think after Toronto lost, Steve said that he completely like logged out of his Twitter, deleted it off his phone, deleted it off his computer, like doesn't go on it. He only goes on it to tweet out when he has a new video up with Sportsnet or the new podcast. So And I kind of, and I've seen it on my social media with people that I follow unrelated to hockey or sports that kind of take a step back and like decompress from social media. And I think especially right now during the playoffs, especially if you still have a team in it, like Megan does with the Carolina Hurricanes, or like my dad really likes Boston. So like that whole thing, I think it's really important to kind of take a moment and sit back and kind of say, okay, the people that are on here, like I can let them upset me, and I can let them control me, and I can let them, whatever they say, dictate how I'm feeling about this. Or I can just kind of take a step back and say, you know what I know, and I believe what I believe. And I don't think that someone on social media can dictate that or change my mind or make me feel upset about it or make me feel like I'm wrong about it, because your opinion is your opinion. And so what I say is like, just be aware of that on social media. Like, this is kind of like me being a mom, like, okay, now honey. But social media can be a really good place, and we've seen it with being able to put our brand out there and our podcast out there and our blogs and everything like that. But it could also be a really terrible place and a really toxic place that can cause a lot of distress and can cause a lot of, I don't know, can cause a lot of feelings and anger. So yeah, that's my message to you guys this week, is just take social media with a grain of salt and don't let it get to you.
Good finish. And I completely agree with you. And it's unfortunately something that I don't want to say struggle with, but I think when I get bored, my instinct is to just go, I'm literally scrolling through whatever this is right now, Tumblr, right now, just like not even really looking at what I'm scrolling through. I'm just scrolling just to do something. Mm-hmm. And I think for some people, it just becomes like a habit to just look at it. And sometimes it's good to just take a step back and kind of evaluate the way that you're using it and the way that you're reacting to it. Because I think, and I definitely will say that I have been upset by what somebody's tweeted, or I've been pissed about somebody tweeting something, and I get really heated about it for literally no reason. And it's frustrating that I feel like I need to waste my time on it. But it's also equally as frustrating that somebody uses social media in that way instead of being positive. And I know, like, obviously it's just the world we live in, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like every single one of your points, because especially when it comes to sports, people get very passionate and very heated. And I think sometimes people take it too far. Way more often than it should happen, people take it too far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's, it's just frustrating, because it's like, I don't know, like sometimes you just need to, you need to make sure that it's bringing you like joy and things that you want to see, and kind of eliminating what doesn't bring you joy. And I feel like a lot of times, like, I don't know if any of, like, I know we both have iPhones, but anybody else listening, if you have an iPhone, there's a new feature. It's on the newest update, the software update, but it's called Screen Time. And basically it tells you, it can tell you per day, and it can tell you, I can tell you per week, and it'll give you like a week report at the end of the week. But it basically tells you how much time you're spending on your phone during the day. So by day, so it'll tell you how many hours you're spending on social networking apps, how many hours you spend on entertainment apps, how many you've spent on productivity apps. And then it'll tell you like which apps you use the most and how long you use them for. It'll tell you how many pickups a day you have. So like how many times you physically place your phone down and pick it up, like how many that is. It'll tell you how many notifications you get per day, and where the most of them are coming from. And so I use that a lot too. And then you can also, you can set limits on your apps.
I was going to say, I use downtime, especially when I'm watching a game, because I feel like I did this a lot during the Blackhawks games this season. And I kind of regret doing it, because I would sit there and just not pay attention to the game really. And I would scroll through my phone, or I would just like get upset about something somebody said about the game. Mm-hmm. And like you said, like, it's just, the negativity is just not necessary. And if it's not making me happy, I need to stop. So about, I want to say like maybe early-ish in the season, I started putting my phone on downtime while I was watching the games, because it's just not worth it. Like, there's no point to egg that on. And there's no point to read it if you're not enjoying whatever that is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of nice to just like disconnect for a little bit. I know that sounds like really hippy dippy of me, but
no, it's so true.
It is. I mean, it's like on weekends like this where I'm not really doing anything aside from like catching up on YouTube videos and stuff. I'm usually just, I'm either writing or I'm drawing or I'm doing something that's not, that I can still watch the video, but do something else that's a little bit less mindful. Like I don't have to really think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like a nice little break, because I feel like when I'm at work, anytime I've got downtime, I'm scrolling through my phone, like looking for news on hockey, or it used to be the Avengers when that was, you know, when that movie initially came out. So now it's kind of like, I don't have as much stuff to look at. And as the summer goes on, I'll have less and less to look at with hockey being, you know, over in the next month or so.
Right, right.
But yeah, it's, social media can be really, really good. And I think I'd like to think that like a solid 75% of the time it is,
mm-hmm.
but that other 25% can be really, really toxic. And if you're not careful, or if you're not cognizant of that, it can be destructive. If you're just, even if you're just scrolling through it and all you see is negative stuff, it's just not, it's not worth your time. Like that's, I mute people all the time. Can't tell you how many teams and how many analysts and writers and whatever I've put on mute during series this year. Like I have the Bruins on mute right now, and I have the players that I follow from the Bruins on mute because I love them and I don't want to unfollow them because I really do like their team.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I don't want to not like them because of a tweet I saw or because of,
right,
you know, X, Y, Z. Like, it's just, I don't know.
Yeah. No, it's frustrating.
I'm with you.
Yeah. So that was my cup of tea for the week. So
good. That's a really good, that was piping hot tea. I liked it.
Thank you. Thank you so much. All right. That's it for this episode of the Puck and Ray Chicago podcast. As always, leave comments down below, follow us on our social medias. Megan's always posting that fire content. So go and vote. I always vote on like those Instagram stories you do, by the way. I'm always like, I'm going to get my
vote
opinion.
Vote on my Instagram stories, people. I try to put a couple up. It's coming up with content, I'm not going to lie, it's getting a little hard now that there are only like four teams left, but I'm going to try really super hard to get content up for you guys.
We love it. We love to see it. But yes, thank you for tuning in every single week. You can follow us down below, all of that good stuff. Make sure you come back next week. We are going to be going all the way through the playoffs, all the way through the off season. So we're going to have a ton of stuff for you guys, no matter what time of the year it is, all the way up until training camp next year. So we're super excited. And thank you guys again for following us and listening. And we will see you guys next week. Bye.
Bye, guys.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.